Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Just a quick announcement. The book Loose Units, which this podcast is kind of a sequel to, is almost sold out in Australia. There's not many copies out there. So what we want to do is head online or call up your local bookstores. Basically, I want Loose Units listeners to mobilize and get this book entirely sold out. Because if that happens, we get a second run. And if we get a second run, then Dad and I have some seriously cool stuff planned. So mobilize, let's get that book sold out, and enjoy the episode.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 1980s in Sydney, which has been widely regarded as one of the most dangerous times to be a police officer in Australia. It was basically the Wild West. So I wrote a book about it. It was called Loose Units. And then we did a podcast about it. Loose Units Season 1 was an incredible experience, and we loved every minute of it. But it turns out that Dad did more than just patrol the streets. He plunged headfirst into the terrifying world of forensics. So on this season of Loose Units, that's what we're doing. We're going deep into the world of forensics and fingerprints and all of that good stuff. Well, I say good stuff. Actually, things got worse than ever. So strap in for Loose Units Season 2, Electric Blue. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another horrifying episode of Loose Units 2, Electric Blue. I'm Paul Verhoeven, your host, and with me is my ex-cop dad, John Verhoeven. Dad, last week's episode was harrowing, really harrowing. So yep. I asked you to pop together kind of like a degustation menu for me where you would actually write down prompts for the dishes or cases, if you will, that you thought would be a bit lighter. And you've got written at the top.
There's nothing light in this series.
Yeah, but I asked for light and you just wrote written headless body.
This is not light.
Look, but that's what I'm saying. You've erred and I would like you to...
Is that like erred?
Is that not how you pronounce it?
No, it's erred.
You sure?
No. All right, so what would you like me to...
Well, like I said come up with something nice and fun and frothy counteract the trauma of last week's episode, and you've just written headless body.
Correct.
So I would like this story to have a kind of up ending, but I trust your judgment.
Thank you.
So without further ado, please regale our listeners with the story of the headless body.
Okay, well, look, as the listeners of this wonderful... series, season two. I believe this is episode
five.
Wow, golly, we're really getting into it. So I gave it a lot of thought. Now, as the listeners know, I was involved in forensics and a particularly interesting case. Now, it was weird in that we used to finish around about 5 p.m.
Yep.
Monday to Friday, and then we were on call. And then around about 11 o'clock one night, bearing in mind I was relieved assist, so I was sort of... like the third guy, got a call, sworn to secrecy, and we...
You're going to ruin that now?
Well, we were sworn to secrecy that night.
There's a statute of limitations.
And I was picked up by my colleague in the station wagon that I had alluded to in a previous podcast.
Yes.
Because that was the standard fare in terms of transport. So we could fit all our little boxes of interesting things.
Anal thermometers. It's anal thermometers from Arsehole to Breakfast.
Correct.
Yep.
And got picked up and drove to a location. Now, this is a really weird story. We drove to the Ku-ring-gai National Park.
I know it well, but for people who aren't from New South Wales, what is it like? How big is it?
Okay, well, it's a national park, and it's on the outskirts of Sydney, on sort of the northern beaches, North Shore part of Sydney.
Yeah.
And it was super dark. I mean, it's nighttime, obviously, and... people might go, yeah, that's... but it was actually... there was no moon, so it was actually super... you're laughing, Paul.
Yeah, I just... describing the concept of darkness.
Hang on a sec, Paul. Paul, if there was a moon,
yeah,
like, for example, a full moon,
sure,
it would not be super dark.
But as you've established, there was no moon.
Correct.
And therefore, it was super
dark.
Extremely
dark.
Now, just quickly, Ku-ring-gai National Park, are we talking mangroves? Are we talking...
No.
Right. So what kind of...
Mountains.
Oh, shit.
And gum trees.
Okay.
Possibly koalas, but we didn't see any.
Very Australian.
Yeah, very. Anyway, it's really uncool for me to laugh going into this dark story because it sounds as though I'm not, you know, as I'm, well, taking the whole thing fairly with a bit of brevity.
We've talked on the podcast before about gallows humour and about how you cope with things.
Look, this story, it's a wacky story.
Oh, good.
So we were given these bizarre instructions because there are really no signs in the national park. Once you enter the national park and you head up into the eerie sort of no man's land.
Is this the enclosed national park in DY?
No, that's...
What's that one
called?
You know the one I'm talking about, right?
I know, yeah, that's... No, that's... No,
the reason I mention it is because we lived... listeners don't know this, but...
That was called Stony Range Flora and Fauna Reserve.
Well remembered, and we lived on the back of that because we were the caretakers at an Anglican school for
private girls' school.
At a private girls' school. Mm. And you could crawl over the fence during the school holidays and get straight into the national park. So what I was worried about was I was playing in a national park where you'd found a headless body, but that's not the case.
No.
Okay, great.
But you don't know yet that I found a headless body in the national park.
I mean, all the pieces
are there. That's an assumption. Anyway, so we were given these really bizarre sort of clues to get to this. It was like being on a rally with really just like, it was fairly cryptic.
Who gives you the cryptic clues?
We were given these cryptic clues by some detectives. They basically told us to meet them at a certain point in the national park and... Once we met them, they would then instruct us as to what was required. So at this point in the story, it's nighttime. I'm sort of wide-eyed and, you know, pretty excited, thinking it's obviously we're in forensics. We're heading into the middle of nowhere on the outskirts of Sydney. We don't know what we're doing. We just know that we're meeting some detectives. So eventually we come to some unmarked cars and it turns out that these detectives, they weren't local detectives. In fact, the local police had been kept out of the picture, which is a little bit weird. Normally the local D's like to be kept abreast of everything happening in their on their turf.
The local what?
D's. D for detective.
Oh, was that? I didn't know that was
So can you imagine the letter D in uppercase with an apostrophe then a small s?
Yeah.
D's.
Uh-huh.
That's what we used to affectionately call... Detectives.
Huh.
You haven't heard that before?
Never.
Fascinating.
You never mentioned it during the writing
Isn't
of the book.
Isn't
that
amazing? Yeah. Wow. So anyway, we met the D's, but these particular detectives were from the homicide squad. And I rarely... These homicide squad detectives in New South Wales were regarded as minor deities. They were exceptional on so many levels.
Yeah.
To get into homicide, you had to be the absolute, creme de la creme of detectives. They had to be super smart, be able to remember incredible detail and be tenacious and brilliant.
How do you make a foray into being a detective?
You start off in detectives training, A-list, which I did.
Yeah.
And you, if you're fortunate enough, you become a detective. And then you work your way up and you are, I don't think you ever get to apply to join homicide. I think you're invited.
Oh, okay. It's like the wand chooses the wizard.
Yeah, that's right. And these, I met a few homicide detectives over the years and I had nothing but admiration for them. They were exceptional.
Homicide detectives.
Homicide,
we've talked quite frequently about certain strains of the detective wing of the police where you've found some really awful characters. But what you're saying is there are some really great ones as well.
Oh, phenomenal. You know, the different squad tended to determine what type of perhaps... person you were.
Sure.
You know, like there was the armed hold-up squad, there was the consorting squad, which we've touched on in the first series.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we met these detectives and they made it very clear to us that we were under extreme scrutiny in terms of never to divulge what we were about to encounter.
Sure.
And it was on that night, it was summer, that I recall, they had a guy with them. He was handcuffed, so he was in custody, And boy, oh boy, he was a freaky, scary guy.
Could you describe him?
He would have been probably around about 40, and he looked like a... look, it's weird generalizing, isn't it? But, you know, he had that air about him. He was dressed in prison greens, because in New South Wales, at least, at Long Bay Jail, the color of the outfit they wear is that green.
Yeah, Dad's staying with me at the moment, and I entered the room this morning wearing the Hawkins PD, the phys ed uniform from Stranger Things, and it's this lovely shade of green. And rather than saying, "Hey, cool clothes, Paul," Dad said, "Oh, prison greens."
Hmm.
So you're saying that I look like I'm from a prison?
Well, it just happens to be pretty well the same color.
Oh.
Which is an aside. So he's in prison greens. He's handcuffed. He looks somewhat disheveled.
Mm.
And now this story, I'm just trying to figure out the best way. Do I tell the listener who he was? Yeah, look, I'll just move in a little bit as to this guy. He had been taken from Long Bay Jail that night.
Sure.
And he had information, because quite often in life, if there's been a murder, sometimes the government of the day will grant amnesty.
Yeah, sure.
Or a pardon to those people that can give them information as to the whereabouts of a body, for example, where a crime was committed, providing they weren't actually the murderer. So this particular guy said that he had heard on the grapevine in jail in his time at Long Bay that he'd become aware of a particular victim of a murder, and he'd heard that he knew, or he said to the homicide squad that he actually knew where this particular guy was buried. Now, it was fairly difficult for us to find on this road the police that were waiting for us. And then, as the story will unfold, you'll begin to realise that, well, I think this guy perhaps had been at this particular scene during what I'm about to tell you.
And why do you say that?
There's no way on earth someone could have been told a particular story and then taken the police to this particular point on an unmarked road at night time in the bushes in Sydney. Anyway, so we all started traipsing into the bush, and we're walking through thick scrub at night time, and I'm thinking, what on earth's going on here? We just had torches, and we're walking for probably maybe 100 meters.
Yeah.
We're truly in the middle of nowhere. And then this particular guy who's in custody, he tells us all to stop. And we all stand around and they point the torches down and he says, "Dig here." So everyone looks at me. So I had the job with my little shovel, because we'd been told to bring some shovels and things. So yeah, that sort of was a bit of an indicator.
Mm.
And I started digging. And I got down around about maybe 18, maybe 20 inches.
Are they all just watching you dig?
Yeah, they're all standing around.
That seems...
There's no one's talking.
Are you wearing the suede shoes from the last episode?
No. I was wearing... let me think. I may have been wearing overalls.
Strong look.
Because I was... I'd been told... my boss had been briefed that there may be a bit of digging involved, but he hadn't told me.
Okay.
And so I'm digging away. And then I'll never forget, I found a zipper in the dirt. And as I began to dig, I had the most unfortunate situation of discovering human remains. And it was heavy duty. And I worked for some probably maybe 20 to 30 minutes, and I was the only person in the hole. So I was actually sort of in the hole with this... with a skeleton.
Oh, a skeleton?
Skeletal.
Right, what was it wearing? Do you remember what it was
just
wearing?
Not just clothes, you know, just pretty basic. Okay. But you know how you get the sense that if you've sort of... I could figure out the top and the bottom. I could figure out the feet, the legs. But then, you know, you tend to think that around about the chest and above the chest, you're going to find, you know, a head.
It's basic maths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was no head. So then we had ascertained that it was a headless body.
Mm.
And further investigation by me realized that, in fact, there were no hands. So it was headless and handless.
Now, just quickly, from an outsider's perspective, that seems like the best way to dispose of a body and have no one identified, because you can't get dental records, you can't get fingerprints.
Correct.
Is that, am I right? Is that?
Yeah, spot on.
Okay.
I guess I can just creep forward a little bit in saying that the modus operandi of this particular, of the murderer,
yep,
his MO was always to remove the hands, and he always shot, well, generally shot the victim, and then taking the head with him would then, because generally the bullet would be still inside the skull.
Right.
And then if you take the head with the bullet inside it, there's no ballistics evidence, and you'd get rid of the head somewhere else.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
How clever is that?
Maybe at a different national park.
Well, that's actually not so silly, but that reminds me of another story that we'll touch on later.
Sure. Okay, so at this point, you've got a headless, handless skeleton.
Yeah, sort of wrapped, dressed in fairly standard clothing.
Casual or formal? Or
no, just neat, you know, casual, I suppose. Neat casual, perhaps.
Sure. And at this point, like, how does the... Are you paying any attention to the person who directed you there at this point?
I'd occasionally look up at him, and he'd be just sort of, standing fairly blankly.
Wasn't upset by the whole
thing? No, not in the slightest.
Okay.
And I'd already figured in my mind that he'd actually been at the scene of the murder.
Right.
That was pretty obvious to me. Anyway, so I'm working away and slowly revealing the entire body.
Yep.
And then there was this silence that sort of like a pall of silence that fell over the group. So I guess there would have been all up maybe 10 people there. We're all standing around. I'm in the hole. And then it became fairly clear that there was this kind of a noise and a bit of a weird glow, not coming from... I know what you're thinking because I can see your eyes getting wider. No, not from inside the hole.
I didn't think the body was reanimating magically in front of you.
No, but I mean, it was pretty freaky.
I mean, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, but we became aware that there was this like a bit of a noise. You could hear twigs breaking, and there was a light, and the light was getting stronger and stronger.
Right.
And everyone's going, "What on earth is happening?" We're in the middle of nowhere, exhuming a headless body from, as it turned... I'll come to that later.
But okay.
The thing is, we're all sort of trying to be quiet and figure out what on earth's happening, and the bush is literally starting to glow white.
Holy shit.
Do you know what it is? Do you know what it was?
No.
There used to be a show on TV on Channel 10 called Harry Potter's Live Eye. Not the Harry Potter you're thinking about, but Harry Potter the News. It was like he was like the crime... he was an amazing guy, and he used to do the crime reports every night on Channel 10, and his name, I'm quite sure it was Harry. His surname was definitely Potter.
You think it's like Harry Potter, the journalist who lived. Is this real?
Yeah, and he's coming with a full crew.
What?
And they've got the big spotlights on the big cameras, and it's live TV.
Ah, fuck!
Yeah, yeah,
really?
Yeah, and we're being being beamed in live to Channel 10. No, this is so bad. No, it's really, it's fucked up because you'll begin to realise...
It's an active crime scene.
But not only that. Look, detectives back in the day used to be called the Glory Boys.
I remember,
they used to love a bit of, publicity.
Oh, so they probably...
Well, someone in the group had actually notified Harry Potter. Was his name Harry?
Fucking Harry Potter.
Jesus. Anyway, no, it's really throwing me because picturing Harry... The book character coming along.
Yeah, you remember he found that body under the stairs. We can look that up later, but for now. So you think one of the Glory Boys wanted to... Hang on, Were they like, did they have their hair done? They were looking pretty spiffy.
They always look good.
Right, but I mean...
Homicide detectives, they wore three-piece suits. They were always, you know, pretty suave.
Sure, okay.
So, you know, the full-blown, and unfortunately it was Channel 10's Live Eye. Oh, so, you know, they, you just, the fact is that you're on live, you're being beamed across God knows, and it was really heavy. Because, look, at the time it was weird, you know, a little bit exciting. I'm sort of, and they're filming me in the hole. Sort of looking up this sort of young, sort of wide-eyed, you know, junior forensics guy sort of looking up at the camera and they're filming me. And anyway, so we go back to the office and the next day...
Hang on, sorry. I just want to find out, like, what are you doing when you cover the body and tell them to leave? Like,
No. We, you know, we collect the remains.
Yep. On camera?
Well, I'm not sure. They probably didn't film the entire event, but sure, they got a lot of it.
They got it. Yeah,
okay, so this is all the listeners out there are going, yeah, that's an interesting story, but here's the heavy part of the story. Okay, so that's the bit of brevity and lightness that I've injected into this episode.
Well, I mean, there was a headless body, but otherwise, yeah, it was pretty light. Well,
you know, but it was a fairly jovial atmosphere.
Yeah.
What happened to me the next day and my colleague is that we received a phone call from Internal Affairs,
uh-huh,
and we had to go in and be interrogated by Internal Affairs because it turns out that it was part of the Stuart Royal Commission into Mr. Asia, Terence Clark, who was the Mr. Big in the world of heroin dealing. We're talking the number one badass in the world. I mean, you've got your guys in South America, but this guy was... super, super bad. And his MO was he just used to murder people. And he was a contract killer. And he started off as a two-bit petty criminal in New Zealand. And he just worked his way up. And he was a really, really bad guy. And they'd never been able to track this guy down. Because as I said, every time he killed someone, he'd either completely... he'd shoot them in the head. But in England, he called over one of his... cohorts from Australia, and to entice him, he said they were going to be involved in a massive heroin deal in England. And what he did was he had him murdered as well. And that particular body was put into, I believe, a Jaguar. So he was bashed and shot, put into a car. Then while he was still inside the car, the car was wheeled off a cliff into a quarry that had water in the bottom of it. And they thought that'd be the end of it. But what happened was some recreational divers were diving in the pit and they realised that this Jaguar had not, in fact, gone right to the very bottom. It had been caught on a ledge. And they looked inside it and saw a headless body that it turns out Mr. Asia, Mr. Clark, had murdered. They exhumed and sort of, you know, got cranes in and pulled the Jaguar up and managed to identify this particular cohort of Mr. Clark, Mr. Asia. So we ended up having this massive Royal Commission, a very, very famous Royal Commission. And obviously the judge in charge was really, 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 really upset because this was a covert secret operation to exhume and work on some major, major, crucial, secret sort of, you know, criminal investigation that we were all working on. And then all of a sudden it's beamed across national news Potter's Live Eye. So the judge was, as you can imagine, he would have woken up the next morning to it was splashed across the front pages and it was on TV. And there's this footage of me in this hole digging up this headless body as part of the Mr. Asia drug in Royal Commission. Now, Royal Commissions are no lightweight event. You know, you can compel people to give evidence, and it's the big league. So he was totally, totally pissed off. And then all the police that were there that night were then interrogated by Internal Affairs to find out who had contacted the media.
Yep.
And, of course, I hadn't. Well, that was laughable, but still had to go through the process.
Mm.
Okay, so that's my little Mr. Asia story. But then years and years later, your sister, lovely Anne...
Yeah.
She... because we had this weird rule, you kids know, that we didn't have a TV for years. And then when we did have a TV, you know, we'd only let you watch certain stuff. And
basically, it was ABC and SBS.
ABC and SBS. And I actually said that to a particular person some months ago, and she turned around to me and said, well, you're a bit of a wanker, aren't you? Which I thought was a bit tough and a bit rude, but that aside, that these were the family rules. And a couple of years ago, there was that TV show Underbelly.
Yes.
And that was banned in New South Wales.
Why is that?
Because it was so controversial in terms of, you know, the Sydney underworld. But you could see it, funnily enough, in Melbourne. So when it eventually did make its way to Sydney, I remember one night on our television, Anne said to me, she said, "Oh, Dad, this Underbelly thing," and they were actually having a scene of, they were actually showing a scene from Underbelly, and it was like a promo.
Yeah.
And the scene is a police officer in a dust jacket in a grave exhuming a headless body. And Anne said to me, "Oh, Dad, you know, what do you know anything about this? Like, because I've always banged on about, but kept things fairly, you know.
Vague.
Vague, and because one doesn't like to distress one's siblings, children. But, and I said, Anne, I said, look, you're not going to believe this, but that person that you've just seen on the TV in that promo for Underbelly, that was actually me. And I think that's staggering.
I cannot quite process that. I think, did you ever end up watching the episode or tracking it down?
No, I never watched the series.
I would be curious to see who played you. I'd also be curious to see several things. I'd like to see the news footage from The Boy Who Lived, and I would like to see the episode and see who they cast and see how they did it. Did you ever find out who tipped people off?
No, never.
Never?
No. But it definitely would have been...
One of the detectives?
Well, look, it's a tough one. It could have been one of the local detectives that were pissed off that they weren't included in it. You just don't know. I can't imagine homicide, but you just don't know. But it was weird.
So I guess I have a question about this Mr. Asia character. Is he still alive?
No, he died in custody in 1979/1980 in England.
Wait, so he would have been dead by the time this body was found?
Yeah, he was dead. When I was exhuming this headless body as part of the Stuart Royal Commission, that would have been around about 1983-84. So this body had been ostensibly at least buried for maybe 4 or 5 years. But here's something a little bit interesting.
Yep.
The night that this particular guy was murdered and buried on the northern beaches.
Yeah.
This is freaky. Mr. Asia then drove to Avalon, which is a suburb fairly close by on the northern beaches of Sydney, and kidnapped the guy who he'd just murdered, the guy that I exhumed. He kidnapped his wife and he took her to the Blue Mountains, which is west of Sydney, and murdered her. How's that for heavy?
Why did he do that?
I don't know, but he did. So, he murdered a lot of people.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, this has been, frankly, one of the strangest episodes of this podcast ever. And we've done quite a few episodes. Christ, I feel winded after that. Hang on a sec. So I guess if any listeners to Loose Units, any of you have actually seen the Underbelly scene in question, feel free to hop on the Loose Units Facebook page and start posting, because I want to see if this character looks anything like you, because technically that means you've been on TV. That means that you are part of the Underbelly TV show.
Exciting, Paul.
Yeah. And, we end every episode with this segment, but I'm particularly excited about it today. Okay, here's a question from a listener. This is from Violetta Mbagia. I'm writing a crime novel based in Melbourne. I'd love to know what kind of forensic testing is conducted as a preliminary analysis of a crime scene.
That's a good question.
Okay.
Are we talking about now or then?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I would say we should probably, given your expertise, are on the side of then for you, although I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of anal thermometers.
Yeah. Well, look, obviously one of the key things about a forensic investigation is that it has to be a fairly important and major crime, okay? Mm. You know, you can't waste those resources. So we're talking, you know, shootings,
yep,
stabbings, arson, kidnapping, you know, any terrorist situation, anything where, you know, it's a major crime and there's going to be a possibility of finding incriminating evidence. Now, you might still have the person in custody, but you still need to create the case. So the prosecution are going to require lots and lots of evidence.
Yeah.
So you're talking DNA, you're talking spittle. So if the person was, for example, smoking a cigarette and then he discarded the cigarette butt, if he used the toilet, there can be stuff trapped in the system. obviously anything the person touched, the clothing, the fibres, hair, scrapings underneath fingernails. Look, it's all, and the key in any forensic investigation is that the scene not be
contaminated. Yeah.
And there was a very, very famous case in Sydney. Not sure whether I've ever mentioned this to you, but it's a particularly, well, it's kind of, it's a bit sort of, I don't know whether I should talk about it, but look, I won't go into the details. Suffice to say that there was a very serious crime that was committed once in Sydney, and they found fingerprints from police at this scene. Some of the police worked 40 kilometres away. So they all came in to have a sticky beak.
Right.
And the entire scene was pretty well destroyed. So it's very important once a police officer sees something that looks as though it's going to be serious, they back off. No one's allowed in except the scientific investigators.
Okay, but when you get to a crime scene, for example, you arrive at the house, the story a couple of episodes ago about the hoarder, when you got there and the place had been lit up and kind of prepared for you, what's the first thing you do when you enter? Like, what's your first...
Take photographs.
Photos first. Okay.
Photos first, because it's really, really important to preserve the scene, because once you start to go into a scene, a little bit like it's called destructive archaeology, where as you go deeper and deeper, you are actually destroying evidence to get to whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, when you go into a scene, you're actually going to you know, tamper with things, perhaps inadvertently.
Mm.
And it's really important. Also, years and years later, when you go to give evidence in the Supreme Court, the District Court, you need those photographs to be able to take you mentally back to that time.
Yeah.
So use that as a trigger. And then it's a matter of, you know, taking samples and being really smart and clever and trying to get into the mind of the criminal and see, you know, because you will have been to scenes like this before and you will have learnt and studied a lot at university. And, you know, I mean, I know now that it's a university based, you know, sort of forensic degree, but as I said to you before, in the day, it was on the job training, which I think was really, really, really good.
Okay. Okay.
I hope I've sort of answered that, you know,
I think you have. Sort of way. Yeah, no, I think Violetta will be quite happy. Well, look, keep sending the questions in. And before we finish up, one quick announcement. There's 2 weeks. 2 weeks left until our huge live show. We're doing Loose Units live on stage in Melbourne. So make sure you grab your tickets. There are not many left. Dad is going to be on stage with me, live and uncensored, answering your questions. And to everyone who has sent in questions, yes, we will be doing book signings at the end of the show. No, Dad won't be doing any live singing on stage unless we can somehow coerce him. He looks like he's screaming internally, so I'll stop pursuing that line of inquiry. So head to the Loose Units Facebook group for ticket links, or you can search Toff in Town Loose Units. It's going to be absolutely epic. It's a Father's Day show because this is a father and son story, so we hope you enjoy it, and don't forget to grab your tickets before they sell out. We'll see you next week, but in the meantime, Loose Units is proudly presented by Pillow Talk Productions.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.